welcome our main event of the evening, Stan.
Stan the man. All right,
my name's Stan. I'm an alcoholic. I just want to, let me put, I don't want to hold the soda all night. It looked like I'm holding a beer. Anyways, I just want to say welcome to our out-of-town visitors, which are my friends. I'm grateful to have some people that have come out and support all the way out here in Nipomo, or wait, Oro Grande, Mesa, wherever we're at right now. But also welcome Zach. Welcome our newcomer. We encourage you to stick around long enough to hear our message of hope, and that you can recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. No matter how far down the scale you have gone, no matter how bad you might think you have it, you can recover, get sober, stay sober, and live a good and decent life. And that's what I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a sober date. My sober date's May 30th, 2013. Come next month, I'll have 13 years. I've been to this club quite a few times. I frequent it before. So I love coming out here to this group. I was born. No, I'm just kidding. I like when people start off that way. You know what? I really like to stress the part, you know, what kept me here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, when I heard someone share that we can recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and I had to find myself, where do I relate to that? Where does that, because it just, for some reason, it struck something inside me. And that's because I come from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And when I read in the book and it talked about the alcoholic illness centers in the mind rather than my body, I kept wondering why, since I was a little kid, I would always want to drink, you know. I would see my family, you know, my mother and my father, they would like hire trios. They would host parties at the house, and everyone was always drinking, having a good time, hooping and hollering. And since I was a little kid, I wanted to be like that, you know. I had a father, he loved to gamble, so we would go out to Hollywood Park, Santa Anita, to go watch the horse races. And afterwards, we go to the Mercado in East LA, and there was mariachis, and he would like fish out money them, and they would hire trios at the house. And man, them people, they are not cheap, right? them mariachis and trios, they cost a lot of money, and I don't know. You know, so I'd always look up to them, and I'd always want to try and get, I want some of what they're doing, you know. And I've always drank, you know, during like New Year's, you know, my parents, they drink wine and stuff, and they would give me little sips. But they didn't drink just any wine, man. They drink cold duck. If anybody knows what cold duck is, that stuff tastes like crap, right? I'd rather drink Thunderbird than cold duck, right? But I had no idea, and I just knew that it just, I didn't want it, but the after effect was like, hey, what's going on? You know, so growing up, I my parents were a lot older. And so I never got, you know, any of these talks. Just as a kid, I don't know, I always share about this, you know, the radio station we got going on in our head. You know, as a kid, you know what I mean? We know better. Don't touch a stove. Don't talk back to elders. And, you know, when grown folks are talking, you shut the F up, right? So I would understand that. But at some point in time, this other radio station started turning up. And that's why I talk about, that's why I like to stress that the alcoholic illness centers in my mind. Because at one point it was like, you know what? F that, man. I'm going to do whatever. F you, F them, F it, right? If anybody knows that radio station, they call it K-Fuck It, right? And so I would, you know, that station got turned up at some point to where I couldn't hear, like, hey, you know what, Stan, why don't you stick in school? You know, hey, Stan, you know what, I don't think it's a good idea to be hanging out with them people, you know? I like to share, it's all because I was misinformed by misinformed people, you know? I grew up in the projects, you know, that was my playground, was the projects in Santa Maria. And there was a lot of stuff going on in that place, you know? And so I got myself involved in a lot of things that I shouldn't have been getting myself involved in, like getting in a gang, hanging out with nothing but criminals, parolees, people that are on probation, you know? People that like to, anyways, I don't even want to say, but they were telling me, you know, they were telling me, hey, you know what, Stan, you can't hang out with these people over here. You can only hang out with our kind over here. And then people over there, they're going to call the cops on you, Stan. You don't want to hang out with them. And so I was, like I'm telling you, I was misinformed all my life, and I believed all them lies, you know? And I did not excel in life. You know, I was a smart kid, so I would have been, I was a smart kid too, but the homies would see me like, yeah, you know what, F that book, man, I don't need that. I don't even know why I'm here in class. You know, I had a different attitude towards life, and it was all because I was misinformed, and I didn't know any better, you know? So for me, I started early. I started drinking at 11 years old. You know, I started thinking about this earlier. At 11 years old, I'm already drinking, smoking pot. By 13, I'm doing cocaine and drinking and smoking pot and started selling drugs, you know? Because everyone else around me was doing that. I didn't have any positive influences that were like, hey, you know what, Stan? You know, you're going to be a loser if you do this. You know, you're probably going to go to jail if you do this. You know what? Your family's probably going to disown you if you do that. You know, I didn't have anybody telling me that. All I kept listening to was that misinformation that was just going in my head, talking about, you know what, you're doing good, man. You're doing the right thing, you know. Hey, doc, look out, there's the cops, turn the other way. You know what I mean? And I listened to whatever it was telling me, you know. I didn't know that until I got here and I started reading these things. That the alcoholic illness centers in my mind rather than my body. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we believe is the root of our troubles. My God. When they talk about the real alcoholic, man, my God. How could I have been so blind to all that? You know? And I was just sharing with someone that, you know, at 15 years old, if someone said, hey, you know what, Stan, why don't you read these pages right here? I would have found myself. But like I said, nobody around me, I didn't have any positive influences whatsoever in my life that were like, hey, you know what, Stan, you're going in the wrong direction, dude. I had teachers, by the time I was, when I got to high school, I made it my freshman year, and then they gave me the boot, and they told me, why don't you go, you need to go to this continuation school over here. We can't have guys like you at our school. And I went to the continuation school, and man, it was a perfect school for guys like me who like doing the things that I do. They say, do a half credit, and you can go. Half a credit a day and you can go. Man, I love that, man. I do that half credit, man. Eager, already going, man, I wonder who am I going to hit up when I leave here? I'm going to go to Chewy's house. I'm going to go to, you know, I'm going to go all the wrong places, right? Because, man, I'm done. They can't call the cops on me for chewing. See, hey, I already went to school, man. And so I just kept living like that. You know, by the time I was, right before I turned 18, I'm going to school and I had a teacher. And she just had... She would tell me, Stan, I got a bad feeling. You're doing a little bit more than just drinking and smoking weed. Mm. And I'm like, how do they know? Mm. And on my 18th birthday, I went in there and I said, you know what? I'm out of here. I gave him the finger. Said, I ain't ever coming back. I'm 18 now. I don't have to go to school no more. And that teacher was crying crocodile tears, telling me, man, I'm scared you're going to die. I'm going to tell you straight up, she told me. I'm scared you're going to die. Because I know you're doing more than just drinking. And I moved out. I moved out to the Bay Area. I thought it was a great idea because in the Bay Area, they have this stuff really accessible. I just go down the street and get what I want. Oh, man. Don't have to go anywhere. Don't have to go searching, man. Them guys are on the corners waiting for guys like me who need that stuff. And that was my life, man. And I didn't last but not even 30 days. I didn't even last a whole month. And it's the first time I ever called my mom to come bail me out. I'm like, you got to come get me. You got to save me. I'm dying out here. Mm. And she goes, what's wrong, mijo? And I just like, I got to go home, Mom. I couldn't even tell her. I didn't tell her for a long time. And I resented my mother because the day came when I told her, Mom, I'm hooked on this stuff. I'm caught up. I owe people money. I'm still involved in the gangs. They still want me to do their dirty work and all that stuff. And she goes, ah, oh, mijo, You're going to be all right. And I resented her for telling me that. It was the first time I ever tried reaching out to somebody. And my mom just didn't know. She, like her, she was misinformed too. You know, if my mom was informed, I'd probably have a different life. I probably would have got clean and sober a lot sooner. But I still had to go through the things I had to go through, you know. And I had a bright idea one day that, you know what, maybe I'll just get a girlfriend. Because there was a long period, I'm telling you, from I was 15 till I was about 19. I had no relationships with any women at all because drinking, drugging, selling drugs, gangbanging, all that stuff was a lot more important than trying to have a female with me. And some people might think that's sick. Yeah, I'm very sick. Like normal people, obviously normal people don't think that way. They always want a companion. My companion was King Cobra, cocaine, cigarettes. I had to have lots of cigarettes, right? And some weed to come down. That was all I needed, man. And I would do this stuff every day. Every day. And so, it always started with booze. Booze was a gateway drug. They say, oh, man, this is a gateway drug. No, alcohol for me was a gateway drug. Because once I do alcohol, I got to do everything else. I can't just do one thing. So things got really bad. So I decided, I just need a girlfriend. And I met someone. And next thing you know, both of us are doing this stuff, and it was just really bad. And boom, this little girl right here happened. And man, I wanted to change my life so bad. I wanted to stay clean and sober so bad. And I couldn't, man. I would like to say, man, I could do it for my children. I can't do it for anybody. Nobody. Even when they told me, I got to a point where they told me, you know what, Stan? You're going to die. I'll be all right. Okay. And I keep doing it, man. I'm sick, man. I got diabetes. I got high blood pressure. None of that stuff stopped me. Not once did I think, hey, you know what? I might have a heart attack right now. You know, I'm drinking a lot of cheap vodka and doing this other methamphetamine stuff. You know, I might die. No, not once did it ever cross my mind. The only thing that crossed my mind is I need to get more. And I can't go without. You know, and so it took me a long time. I came in 2001. I thought it might be a great idea. Well, fast to go back, you know, I had my oldest daughter, and then I had two other children, and I just kept going in and out of jail, in and out of jail. I, as much as I hated jail, I knew I was going back to jail every time. I would just want to stop. And they would send me these programs. So my first experience with coming to Alcoholics Anonymous was in 94. I got a drug diversion. And so they're like, okay, you got to do this Central Coast Headways. And then part of that, you're going to do the counseling. And part of that, they want you to do go to AA meetings. And I was like, all right. So this is my first AA meeting I ever went to. It's at a place called Casa Seca in Santa Maria. And I went to that place and I got in there and I started hearing these guys share, right? And man, they were sharing some good stuff. And I was already convinced, you know what? I'm one of them. I belong here. And so I just didn't, you know, a lot of people are new. They're curious about, okay, well, what happens now that you're sober? Like, what do you do? Because I couldn't imagine going to a barbecue without a drink. I couldn't imagine going to birthday parties without. I couldn't imagine going to dinner without having a drink. Couldn't imagine taking a shower without a drink. That was my story. And so I went to go rob these guys' conversation. I'm like, hey, so what do you guys do now? And they both looked at each other. They're like, we're about to go get a drink right now. And I was like, oh, my God, man, these guys. And I went to get talk to the guys that were talking that good stuff, right? And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe these guys. And I'm like, all right, let's go. You know, and I went with them. So my first impression of coming to meetings was everybody was full of crap. And I can't believe none of them. And so fast forward to 2001, here I go one more time. I'm caught up. It was 2001. I'm caught up and I'm in jail. And I got busted with my baby mom, another baby mom. And we had just had so I'll talk about her too. She was the apple of my eye. She was my angel. And she's the main reason why I wear purple right now. I named her myself. I named her Roselia. And I love this little girl. And I wanted to stop in the moment. This is how God works. The moment I decided, you know what? I'm going to stop. Here comes a sheriff kicking down the door. Get on the ground. I'm like, I was saved. Anyways, I'm in jail, and I was with my baby mama, and I'm calling her, and she's telling me, you know what? yeah, I have to do this program and I'm going to meetings and I got a sponsor. And I go, wait a minute, what? Rewind. She's all, I'm going to meetings, I got a sponsor. Oh God, don't believe them people, man. And people are full of crap. She goes, no, these people are really clean and sober. And I swear, you know, and I got a sponsor and I'm working steps. And I'm like, look it, all right, I'm in here, you know, I'm doing the Bible thing. Yep. For me, I found God in jail. I don't know if anybody else ever found God in jail, but I found God in jail, and I'd always leave him there. I'd tell him, I'll be right back. And I go, oh, and here I come. Hey, God. You know, I'm one of them kind of guys, you know. I found God in jail, and I would leave him there. So I'm in jail, and I'm telling her, look, man, we're just going to go to church. We're going to do a Bible study and this. And she's like, look it. I'll do whatever you want to do, but you have to at least come to one meeting with me. Try this thing out. If you don't like it, then yeah, we'll just do your Bible study and Jesus and church thing. And I'm like, all right. And I went to my first meeting. It was July 18th of 2001. I'm a date kind of guy. I remember dates, right? And I went in through the other fellowship. And I got in there, yeah, whatever, man. These people are full of crap, you know. I went and sat in that meeting, and I heard everything I needed to hear. I heard the message of hope, and that you can recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And there was a gentleman by the, I'm going to say his name was Joe Gotchel, and he was a good man. He took me through the steps, and he showed me a lot about service. I was just sharing with someone that, you know, they went to the Portuguese Hall today to another event. And at that hall, Christmas Day in 2001, he told me, come with me to this meeting. I'm like, all right, man. I'm, you know, it was Christmas. I'm wearing my, you know, my warm clothes and stuff. And he makes me go to this meeting with him. And then we get there at the Portuguese Hall. And he goes, hey, by the way, you're going to be the 10-minute speaker. I'm like, bro, that was the first time I ever shared. And I'm grateful that... that I got to hear that message. You know, I wish I could have stayed. I wish and pray to God, I wish I could have stayed. But I had to do more researching because other things become more important, like getting a job and taking care of my family, that I decided that I don't need to go to meetings anymore because I'm taking care of my family. And I stopped going to meetings. And sure enough, there was another guy that I met through the fellowship. He worked with me, and one day he goes, hey, I'm like, hey, where are you going? He's like, I'm going to go cash my check. I go, hey, can I go with you? He goes, yeah. And we went. He goes, hey, I got to make a stop real quick. And I know what that make a stop real quick means. And I decided to make sure he got me something too, and I ended up going back out. And I stayed out, and I tried coming back, man. It was so hard for me to come back. And they eventually sent me to Santa Barbara Rescue Mission. I failed doing that program. And I knew they were going to eventually send me to prison. In 2004, they sent me to prison for my first time. And here I am, 30 years old, going to prison. Have no business, you know what I mean? But it was kind of like something I had seen, that if I didn't get clean and sober, this is where my life was going to be. And eventually started going that way. And I eventually said, you know what? Cool. Send me to prison. As scared as I was, and I went to prison, man, I got out and I drank again. But for me, I got there and I got ordained, people. You know, I was going to be the next Billy Graham. Hallelujah. Praise Jesus, right? 6 hours after I paroled, I was drunk and loaded, and all those credentials I left that prison with to start my own church were gone. Were gone, man. It, you know, and I always say, man, if that was what God wanted for me, then that's what he wanted. So eventually, you know, I made it back to the rooms in 2008, and I did my best. My daughter got sick. The daughter I was talking about, Rosie, she ended up with leukemia, and I got to spend her last year of her life. I got to spend being a father for once to her, because all she knew was that guy who kept coming in and out, kept going to jail. We had to go visit him, and this and that, you know. That poor sick individual, and I got to show her that I could be a father, and I got to spend the last year of her life, you know, being a father, suiting up and showing up and actually telling her, hey, I'm going to be there at 5:00, and I was there, you know, told her, you know, I'll come with you to whatever, you know, you go to your doctor's appointments, anything like that, you know, I got to be there for her, and she passed away, and it broke my heart. you know, and the thing, beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I hate to ruin your Saturday evenings, but nobody's story is unique here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can never say, oh, they're never going to understand what I've been through. No. When she passed away, my sponsor told me right after I was leaving the hospital, he said, go to the meeting and share about it. Share about what's going on. And I went to a meeting and I shared about it. And a woman came up to me afterwards and she told me, she goes, you know what? She gave me a big hug and I'm like, oh, she feels sorry for me. She goes, I know your pain because I lost a child too. Mm. You know, and that was so awesome. Then I got to meet my friend in Lompoc, another member who lost a daughter too, and we share that common bond too, and I love that dude because he's always there for me too. But that's a beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that you can never say, you know, and it kind of just like kills it. Like, man, you can never say you don't understand because we do. You're not alone here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm grateful for that. I wish I could say that I stayed clean and sober after that, but I didn't. What happened for me, and I like sharing this because it could be somebody else's story, but what happened was right after she passed away, I didn't grieve the way I should have grieved. And a lot of things were happening. I was going to school. I kept going to school. She passed away. I took a day off of school. And I was going to school, and the dean of Hancock College pulled me over. He said, hey, man, you can back out right now, and we'll give you a hardship. You know, we'll let you come back next year when you're done grieving and start all over. And my daughter, she hated missing days of school because she loved school so much. And she hated missing those days when she'd have to go get the chemo and all that stuff and have to see the doctors. And so I was like, you know what? This is what she would want me to do. And so I stayed in school. And I ended up on the dean's list the following year. I did all my exams. I did these presentations and stuff for my finals. And they put me on the dean's list. And I was totally unexpected. But there was still a lot of stuff going on inside of me. I was asked. I had a whole bunch of guys I was sponsoring. I was asked to speak up and down the coast from Santa Barbara to out here San Luis Obispo. A lot of people were asking me to come and share, and I started getting this big head about everything. And I went from recovery to ego. It was like, hey, look at me, I can walk through anything. Because prior to that, so let me tell you another story. Prior to that, so my daughter passed away November 24th of 2010. My father passed away August 20th, right before her. And I'm a firm believer that my father's last words were, you go be with your mija, because she had a relapse with the leukemia and they were taking her to Santa Barbara. And he said, his last words, you go be with your mija. And I'm a firm believer that he passed away so that way when she got to heaven, she wasn't alone. Mm. And those are two people who I love the most. You know, my father was my best friend. I struggled with that ego thing. And I was going to take some time off, and I had a great decision that maybe I should get in a relationship. And I tried getting a relationship, and the moment that person didn't do what I wanted them to do, because they're going to do it now, right? I flipped out, and I got a really deep resentment, and I knew I was going to drink again. I knew I was going to get loaded again, and I did. And a couple of things my sponsor told me, he goes, okay, I wrote out that inventory before I called him. Because I knew, my head kept saying, we're going to get high, we're going to drink, we're going to do it. I had a whole party going on before the party, right? And so I wrote out this inventory, and I shared it with them. And he goes, okay, when I was done, he's like, okay, I want you to go back. I want you to pull the book down, look at the first five proposals, as it tells us in the big book. Take an hour to yourself, say that seven-step prayer. Yeah, afterwards, I want you to go to the club and grab a newcomer or grab a sponsee and just listen. And that was that last part was the one thing I couldn't do. I couldn't get outside of myself long enough. And it had saved me from when my dad passed away and when my daughter passed away to go down to the club, share about what's going on, and listen to somebody. And I just wasn't willing to do that. And I eventually drank again. And I stayed out almost 2 years, but and a lot of stuff happened in them 2 years that I just kept running from everything. Like every day I wanted to come back. But every day my head told me, go tomorrow. We'll do it tomorrow. We'll do it tomorrow. And I'm the guy, I used to carry a little big book in my back pocket. And over in Santa Maria on Main Street, there's a store called Santa Maria Liquor. And I would be a little bit short, you know what I mean? And I'd see some guys that I knew, because I knew a lot of people go in there to get cigarettes and drink or whatever, you know? And I would carry them, hey, bro. I'd see him, hey, man, check out, you know, this is what the big book says right here. This is what you, you know, I'm trying to carry a message outside the liquor store, you know? and I knew a lot of people, you know? I knew Chewy. And every time I kept trying to go to Chewy's house and watch a Raider game, they kept passing the pipes. So I'm like, you know what? I can't be here. You know, I knew Shopping Cart Willie, and Shopping Cart Willie be outside that liquor store telling jokes, begging for change. And it just got to the point where, man, I don't know why, but for me, that was alcoholic torture, is knowing that everything in this book never lied to me, and it always told me the truth. And like I said, the truth will set you free, but first it's going to piss you off. That's what happened. Is everything I knew I was doing, it was already written in the book. It was telling me. It was giving me that ominous warning that if I get a resentment, there's a good chance I'm going to go back. And every day I was still dealing with that resentment, and I wasn't letting go. And I fought it, man. I kept fighting it. And I kept, man, I had everything at my disposal, you know, because I'm still selling drugs. I still got a good supply of cheap vodka. And it wasn't because I was a cheap bastard. It was because the cheaper and the crappier it was, I knew I was going to get exactly what I needed from it. And so I stayed with that cheap vodka. And that's for me. I'm not a top shelf. You know, if it tastes really sweet, I'm like, no, this is foo-foo stuff. I need that real junk, you know, charcoal filtered, nasty, going to rot your gut kind of. I don't know. That's just me. All right. And I was a connoisseur. No, I'm just kidding. I wasn't. But yeah, I stayed out there almost 2 years, and every day I wanted to come back. I had a lot of recordings of the speaker meetings I did. I would listen to some of the people that I've known in Santa Maria that passed away, and I still had their speaker CDs, and I would listen to a lot of speaker CDs, and I would, while I'm drinking, crying, wanting to come back and just not wanting to be that way no more. And it was hard, you know. I couldn't do it for my kids. I couldn't do, and my kids got taken away. One of my son got taken away, and he would call me from that home, and he'd be like, Dad, you know, the kids would call me, and I'd be like, God dang, man. It was just really hard. And I found myself at this park. I got stuck. I got picked up one more time, and they let me out. I thought they let me out on accident, and I ran. Forgetting I send my friend money so he can bail me out. And I ran. And then I got to a friend's house who was really mad at me. And he had every right to be. He didn't want to answer any of my calls. I just ended up knocking on his door saying, hey, man, any way you can get me back to Santa Maria. And I went back to Santa Maria, and I picked up all my stuff, and I ended up going back to his house because he invited me. And then when he thought I was out of my stuff, he was like, hey, man, you got to go. He did one of those moves. And I was like, okay, this really wasn't my friend. But I got stranded out there, and I'm sleeping in this park. And for me, I call it Fantasy Island. You know, I had my Raider blanket out, and, you know, it was a nice little cove spot. And then there's a little hot plug on the side of the restroom. And I was able to plug in my cell phone, my little speakers, my little laptop. And I was living it up. I was on Fantasy Island and believing that everything was okay, you know. And there was a Bevmo. It was at Costco over in Goleta. There's a Bevmo in there. And I had my water bottle. I just poured that cheap vodka inside that water bottle. And I was, man, and go inside the restroom, do my thing. And one day it just hit me, the black and white of reality. It finally hit me, saying, you know what, Stan, you're going to die out here. And nobody knows what's going on. There used to be a Kmart when Kmart was still open. And I had people coming out from Santa Maria to come pick up their stuff. And I would go to that Kmart, and I would send my mom money. And, you know, just to trying to do the little that I can do. And every day this thing would just nail me. And like I said, a black and white reality hit me one day. And I had to get back to Santa Maria, and I went back to Santa Maria, and I still had a case. I was going to run from everything because I had no parole or any probation or anything other than a new charge. And I went to go turn myself into this program, this outpatient program. And the guy told me, all right, you know, it was Memorial Day weekend. He goes, you might want to try calling on the weekend. You're officially part of the program now. So you're going to call over the weekend to see if we're going to have testing. I was like, yeah, sure. And after I left that office, it was on a Friday, some guy had been calling me and I told, don't call me no more. I'm done. And he just gave me another resentment and I decided to drink. That was my last weekend. Memorial Day weekend of 2013, and I finally came to, and it was already Tuesday, and it was a 3-day weekend, and they had called me in, and I went in there, and I just said, you know what, dude, here, I'm, you know, I partied, send me to jail, whatever it is you want me to do. He's like, why don't you go sit in this group, and I went, and I sat in the group, and I'm listening to everybody, and like, all these people are not serious about recovery, Stan. You know where to go if you're serious about recovery. And I left that place, and I left that group, and I remember going home, and there's a story about me in this book. It's called The Jaywalker. And I got up to the light. It was only a block and a half away from where I lived. I get up to the light, and I see someone walking out to their car. And I'm like, oh, shoot. And, like, the light was still red, and so I just ran over there. I'm like, hey, where are you going? She's like, I'm going to a meeting, Dad. In other words, I'm going to a meeting, you asshole. And I said, is it okay if I go with you? Yeah, get in. And I got to that meeting, and right in the parking lot as we pulled up, there was a gentleman named Billy who was out there, and he gave me a hug, and he hugged the tears right out of me. It was everything I needed. And I didn't even know, even at that moment, I didn't know I wanted this or I didn't know I wanted to stay sober. And when I got in the meeting, there was a gentleman by the name of Jason. And I remember him from the Junkyard Dogs out of Santa Barbara. And I knew I had to ask that guy to be my sponsor. And the moment I asked that guy to be my sponsor, practically with tears, from that moment until this, that obsession of want to drink had been lifted. But not the obsession to want to act out in selfish and self-centered behaviors. And that's what these steps are here for. It was the first thing I did was I got busy. I didn't wait around. He told me, you know what to do? Read up to page 60. When you get to the ABCs, give me a call. And on my third day, I gave him a call. And he said, I'll come out to meet you. I was staying at the shelter at that time. And he came over and we got on our knees and we did this third step prayer. And then he outlined the fourth. And I remember that third step prayer when we got on our knees. When I got up for that split second, I was like, hey, I wonder if any of the homies see me, you know. But then I was like, man, I don't even care because I want this, you know. To this day, right here at this very moment, still, I want it more than I can fucking breathe, man. More than anything in this world do I want to stay sober. I don't ever want to go back, and I don't ever want to forget that shithole of a life I was living prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, man. It was not living. You know, but up here, love to justify everything I did, every move that I made, you know, it was like, you know what, they deserved it, or you know what, I deserve this, and I don't want to be on that thought process, on that thinking plane, you know, and since that day, man, I got busy on the steps, and I started working steps, and I started getting busy sponsoring guys, you know, I went, in the first 90 days, I started sponsoring guys. I went to, I got sober and I was at a sober living, and I've been sponsoring guys out of that sober living ever since. I go back to it. I go back to it every week now to do a panel there, just to show the guys that, you know, this thing works, you know, and I carry that message that this thing works. And I carry that message that we recover from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body because, man, I'm not perfect. Just because I worked all 12 of these steps, just because I stay active in these steps all day long, doesn't make me a perfect person by far. I fall short daily. And for me to admit that, that's a lot because I don't like telling people that I fall short. You know, that's my ego. It doesn't want to tell people that, no, man, I'm good. Look at me. Look at me. You know, no, man, I fall short, man. And it's okay, you know, because I'm grateful for this right here. Having had the spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles. It doesn't say we perfect these principles. It says we practice them. Every day I get on my knees, I pray to this God of my understanding. I'm grateful for this God. He started off real small as I knew there was a God and that wasn't it. And to this day, he's huge. He's huge. He either is or he isn't. And for me, he is. And when he isn't, it's because I'm taking my will back. You know? And I understand that today. You know, I don't just because I know God doesn't mean I go and preach God, but I'll tell you what, he's the only one I can trust. He's the only one I can trust. And he hasn't let me down. He hasn't. I haven't driven off a cliff yet. You know? Yeah, he hasn't let me down. So why would I want to change up to what's already working for me? You know? Telling you, this thing works. If it didn't, I wouldn't freaking be here, man. I got better ideas of barbecue in my life. But today, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned that the infallible solution is trust God, clean house, help others. That's all I got. Thanks.